Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 214.
This week on the podcast, if the worst thing that will happen under a Clinton regime is taco trucks appearing in every corner, sign us up.
And Hillary Clinton doesn't remember whether she has email problems or not, as well as 38 other things that may or may not be important.
Plus, Hillary Clinton's been kidnapped by rich donors and forced to make pleasant small talk with people just like her.
Polls indicate that hatred for Clinton is still high enough that Donald Trump could be the president.
Plus, you know the fracking science is bad, if even Oklahoma is taking it seriously.
And Michelle Bachmann, she's still insane, still amazing, and still suffering from crazy eye syndrome.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
And on social media.
And on social media. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on SoundCloud. I wouldn't, because we don't post all of our podcasts
but
on SoundCloud.
But we're technically there.
But we are theoretically there. If you want to hear some great teasers for Brain Trust Live.
From old episodes, I would assume, probably, right?
Then yeah. SoundCloud is where it's at.
If you're looking for short clips of old news,
then
our SoundCloud page is really... It can't be beat.
It's true. I know. I also realized, because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts because I've been working from home for the last few months, that almost every other podcast, they have a segment at the beginning that's too long where they tell you all their live engagements.
Oh, yeah.
The beauty of us is that we don't have any
live
engagements. So you don't ever have to listen to that
section. We did once.
It was fun.
Yeah.
We could do it again.
Yeah, we could.
But are we regularly performing all over LA? No, we're certainly not.
No.
Thank God. It turned out... Live performance, live talking as ourselves is fine.
Right.
Live performing is not our thing.
No, we're not.
We're not trying to pretend to be other people performing.
Certainly not. No.
In any case.
Yeah.
The big news of the week was that Donald Trump went to Mexico.
A surprise invasion of Mexico. Basically what it was.
Yeah, well, an invited invasion. So their president is very unpopular.
Invited by the president only, and I think... And roundly opposed by all living Mexicans.
Mexicans, all other people in Mexican government, like pets and animals, I would assume, in Mexico, also very against this.
Get this joker out of here.
Exactly. So Peña Nieto, who's the president there, who is disliked by basically everyone in Mexico.
Nobody likes him either. So.
Exactly. Has invited both Trump and Clinton to come. And Trump took him up on it, I think... A, because he wanted to be even more mysterious about his thoughts on immigration, and B, because he wanted to look a little presidential.
Right, exactly. He had scheduled, he already had this big speech, because we talked last week on the podcast about how he had, you know, 10 different thoughts on immigration within, you know,
Last week was a confusing time.
Where complete with, you know, polling of audience members as to what his immigration plan should
be. Right, he started with some ideas, he moved to some new ones. At the end of the week, he was like, tell me what I think, audience.
So he had scheduled a speech in Phoenix... for this week already. Like, that was already on the books. And
Possibly to look like he could know what he thought.
Right, exactly. Because that was to clarify his bumbling positions
on what he thought, though, was since he doesn't want to clarify his bumbling positions, what he should do is something really confounding, like visit Mexico and hold a joint press conference with the Mexican president before giving the speech in Phoenix.
But no one knew this was happening until, like, at least the night before.
Yeah. Well, no, and the Secret Service hadn't even... The Secret Service had been told, I think, last weekend that it might happen, and then they were told it wasn't happening, and then they were told that it was happening.
Yeah.
And interestingly, he also didn't consult with the current president... about doing this. So like
our current president about doing this, like Obama.
Because normally what would happen is if a presidential candidate was going abroad, they would request some sort of briefing from the current administration to sort of just like see what they were getting into.
Yeah.
And he didn't request any sort of briefing because he doesn't care if he has information or not.
No.
And just like want...
He never
just,
has prior to now, so the there's only no use in starting.
Time that the... Like the only, you know, like in... the only time that the Obama administration got involved in all of this, the only sort of like communication with them was about what Secret Service detail would follow him there. And so he just sort of like took a renegade trip to Mexico.
Right. With a couple fellow awfuls.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani
and Jeff Sessions. Two of the greatest awful people out there.
God.
So there they go. No information. Three idiots traveling to Mexico together.
Yeah, seriously.
Looking to meet with the president.
Yeah.
They have a two-hour behind closed doors meeting with Peña Nieto.
Yeah, there's no...
There's no evidence of what was...
No, there's no press.
Yeah, there's no press. No. There's no evidence of what was said other than what they claim was said.
Right, they had a... Right, exactly. And they did have a press conference
after
the meeting, but there was... They both had differing opinions on what happened in the meeting.
Exactly. Like, imagine you're at a joint press conference with Donald Trump, who wants to build a wall with Mexico and make them pay for it, and the president of Mexico, who obviously has opposed that plan.
Right.
doesn't intend to pay for a wall. No. Even as disliked as he is, it's not because he wants to pay for the wall.
No.
One thing all Mexicans agree on, despite many political differences,
is that they're not going to pony up right. for a wall.
It's a politically diverse nation like many, and yet none of them want to pay for a wall on their border. So in any case, they get to the press conference. And first of all, what's notable about this is, A, that Trump sounds like vaguely conciliatory the whole time. So he didn't, he kind of like, I mean, John Podesta, Clinton's campaign manager, described it as him choking in the room.
Yeah.
Because basically he said that they didn't discuss the wall, which is the only thing to be there to discuss, right. by the way.
And because later Peña Nieto tweeted that basically the very first words out of his mouth when Donald Trump walked
right,
in the door
was that
Mexico is not going to pay for the wall.
He literally tweeted at the beginning of the conversation with Donald Trump, I made it clear that Mexico will not pay for the wall.
In some respect, they didn't talk about it because the discussion of it got immediately shut down.
Yeah.
But it was brought up.
It was brought up by the other person.
Right.
And
not the one who claims to be the world's greatest negotiator.
Exactly. So then John Podesta issued a new statement where he said, it turns out Trump didn't just choke. He got beat in the room and lied about it.
Yeah.
Which is very...
that's exactly what happened.
I mean, that's very Trumpian problem to have, is to go... you talk too big and then you go into a room with a guy who somehow, despite being disliked by everyone, became the president of Mexico. That guy's probably a great negotiator. I mean, he's obviously an asshole, but like... Right. Is he a great negotiator? Possibly.
Yeah.
So he was actually like, the way that he kind of like cast our shared interests was sort of interesting. Because he kind he talked about how Border Patrol and immigration, these are all shared concerns of ours, which they are. Because like Mexico's also not trying to not care that there's a border issue there.
Well, right.
So he talked about that as a shared thing. He pointed out that undocumented immigration has slowed quite a bit in recent years.
Yes.
Possibly because Obama's deporting everyone.
Peña Nieto, not Trump.
Right, no, this was Peña Nieto.
Trump didn't do anything so crazy.
He talked about how great free trade is, which is interesting, because Trump doesn't, and the one area we agree with Trump on.
But then Trump,
free trade's been great for Mexico.
But then Trump sort of actually didn't speak that negatively about free trade at this press conference either, though,
Trump
which was fascinating.
Trump choked in the fucking room.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Trump was like, oh, okay, I guess I agree with everything you said.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, he said
that was his version of being presidential.
Yeah, as he was like, I'll just say whatever they said. I'll say whatever everyone's saying.
This guy's the president.
Yeah.
I don't want to be out for him.
Exactly.
Even though it's not.
Apparently. Not at all. No. But Trump also hilariously said that he had tremendous feelings for Mexican Americans. He said, I am proud to say how many people I employ. They are tremendous people. He has tremendous feelings for his Mexican American employees.
Employees, yes.
Close friends of his, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically, Trump talked about the loss of manufacturing jobs in the U.S., but he didn't blame Mexico directly, which is normally what he does.
Yes.
Normally, he's like, Mexico is stealing our jobs.
Yes.
And he thinks that Mexicans are stealing our jobs and Mexico is stealing our jobs. So on both sides of the border, he's convinced that Mexico is, and maybe China, are responsible for theft.
I also don't, interestingly, he didn't talk about rapists and murderers while he was there.
While he was there. It was an interesting departure for him.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so that he says that he's talking about keeping jobs in the hemisphere is the goal. So suddenly he cares about all of us. We're all people.
Yeah, he's a lover of NAFTA.
He's a lover of NAFTA all of a sudden. Because that, by the way, is the whole point of NAFTA.
Right.
And he, by the way, benefited tremendously from NAFTA. So what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah.
In any case, then he goes to Phoenix.
Yes.
Delivers the exact
opposite
speech
of what he's like back, literally from previously in the day at this press conference he was claiming.
He's back to being militant on wanting to deport basically everyone under the sun. He said that, you know, he did say that that undocumented people could be allowed to return lawfully if they had left. But that's a bullshit talking point.
Right.
Because everyone knows you can't leave as an undocumented person and then just like come back legally.
Right.
The reason they came as undocumented people is because they couldn't come legally.
Right. Well, and the fascinating thing about this speech is because he definitely did go back to sounding way more militant, and especially in comparison to what he had done earlier in the day. But the whole reason that he had scheduled that speech in the first place was to clarify his thoughts on deportations. Because what he had initially
said... the week
before,
he had made no sense on that.
Right, because initially in the campaign, he said that they were going to have deportation forces who were, like, literally going to go around and round people up and, like, send them back to the country from whence they came.
Doesn't that sound like a wonderful plan?
Right, exactly. So...
sounds comforting.
Last week, he had been going back on that, probably
he was trying
because
to reach out to
he
moderates.
Maybe realized that it was
in the general
an insane
election.
Plan. And then he comes out in this Phoenix speech with a 10-point plan, and there's still nothing in there about deportations. He says that they all have the right to be, or not the right to be deported, but under the law, they could be deported.
Right.
But he doesn't say that he's going to do it. There's no mention
how
he's going to do it. There's no mention of these forces that are going to go around, you know, to taking people out of their homes in the night. Like,
right.
So...
Well, interestingly, it's
so crazy that he came up with an entire 10-point plan, and not one of the 10 points was to address what the speech was supposed to be about.
And he starts going back on some of the rhetoric, or not going back on it, but returning to some of the rhetoric that we've heard earlier about how, you know, he leans heavily on the idea that, like, the people that we will make sure are deported are the illegal immigrants who've committed crimes. Like, he's obsessed with the idea that illegal immigrants are committing crimes. First of all, they've already found that proportionally fewer, like, illegal immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than anyone else.
And that is actually...
And secondly, this is a fake problem that only exists because somebody blew up one story about one undocumented person in San Francisco shooting a person. Well, and all of a sudden, it was like all of the shootings in America are suddenly what, undocumented people committing them? Like, it's white Americans that are committing those, my friends.
And what's ridiculous about that is what our... that's what our laws are now.
Yeah.
The people who are supposed to be rounded up and deported are people who have been arrested for crimes, and then you find out that they're a legal immigrant, and then if it was a crime, then you deport them. That's what we're doing currently.
By the way,
that's
what like every nation on earth does.
Right, exactly.
That's how most immigration law works in the world. And that's fine because, you know, once you've legally allowed someone to immigrate here, or if they have just ended up here, if in the case of America, this is a bigger problem here than in a lot of countries, but like, it's not really a problem because we're a huge nation that can absorb that many people. But like, that is how all immigration law works everywhere in the world. If people come from somewhere else and they are just like not bothering anyone,
working,
who cares?
And their children are going to school and they're
like
paying their taxes, which illegal immigrants do, despite what Republicans like to tell you.
There's a lot of ways in which people are taxed, and many of them are ways in which you get taxed even if you aren't documented.
Correct.
And then, but like, obviously, if like they have committed a crime, that is a special category of person where we deal with them in the way that we treat criminals.
Correct.
Like, that is not a problem that we're having here where, like, we have no law on the books that allows us to
we don't need a new law from President Trump to fix that problem.
No, exactly. Like, he's not solving a problem that we have.
And do things...
P.S., this is not even a real problem. No. Like, this is like voter fraud. It's a fake problem that was made up by the Republicans.
Yes.
We don't have voter fraud, and we don't have an issue with undocumented people going around committing crimes.
Right. Has that happened before?
Sure.
Sure.
Has everyone, every demographic has committed crimes.
Totally.
That's out there. It's happening. Yeah. There's bad seeds all over the place.
Yeah.
But like,
white people who have born here are really,
they're committing
doing
a lot of crimes.
Bang up job of committing.
Most of the really heinous crimes, if you really get down to it. But I mean, this is not, this is like more rhetoric that's meant to kind of rely on that rapists and criminals ideology that he kind of initially got all this support on the basis of. And it's, this is going back to his sort of hardline opinion of, but without a, I mean, continuing to have no plan to support it, but like, it's going back to his hardline language. It's going back to the law and order language.
But it's also just not based in, well,
planning.
Reality. Like,
it's
so
not,
many of his plans aren't.
Right. It's not based in anything in particular other than rhetoric that drums up fear among isolated white Americans who are afraid that everyone is out there to take their jobs. And the real problem is that, you know, corporatist policies have robbed them of any income growth in the last 20 years. And they have, you know, been rightfully convinced that they are suffering.
Yeah.
And they are, but it's not because of what they think it is.
Sure isn't.
It's not at all. And it's not because of something that Donald Trump is going to solve for them.
Certainly not.
I mean, that's
a ludicrous. No one has ever been less equipped to solve this problem for
literally
them.
Anyone's problems. The most important part of this whole Mexico trip situation, though, was the scandal that broke out over whether or not Donald Trump had forgotten to remove some bobby pins from his hair. The fascination with Donald Trump's hair, and listen, I have a problem with people commenting. As much as we have commented on Hillary Clinton's appearance in the past, I have a problem with that being sort of connected to her qualifications for being president.
I do too.
We obviously make fun of Republican hair a lot. We make fun of a lot of politician looks on this podcast.
Yeah.
We are not necessarily comfortable suggesting that that is something that is a rightful thing to like comment on as
a
presidential candidate.
We also make fun of all Republican hair too.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. We make fun of Republican hair.
I mean, this
all
is
the time.
Not this is not a special woman thing that we're doing.
No,
here. I mean,
and
we're
that is
we're doing it.
Why
but it, she's not getting special treatment from us?
She's not getting
is what
special
we're
treatment.
Saying.
But more importantly, I feel like there are some people for whom the discussion about how they look is about more than how they look. It's not true for Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Hillary Clinton is just someone who's getting the unfair burden of that because she's a woman.
Correct.
You know, but I would contend that a white man who is an unnatural shade of orange who spends a huge amount of money and time obsessively combing his thinning hair is somebody who, that speaks more to his sort of priorities and lifestyle
than it does
to his sort of like, you know, ability to be president. I don't think that this is the reason he's not qualified to be president, but I think it's fair game for discussion because Donald Trump has silly hair.
He has very silly hair.
And he has had silly hair forever.
Donald Trump.
He's basically famous for having silly hair.
Donald Trump largely exists as a person that you are aware of.
Because of
his ridiculous hair. Because there are a lot of famous real estate moguls out there who you have not heard of.
Yeah. A lot of boring white men who are not in a natural shade of orange, although some are.
Some are.
But just don't have such silly hair.
But I would contend there are a lot of rich people out there who don't look crazy, and you don't know who they are because they are not as crazy looking as Donald Trump.
I would contend also that even the people that you do know who they are, like Warren Buffett, we all know what he looks like. If he walked by me on the street right now, I would not notice. I would be like, there's a guy, you know? He's a person that I recognize because I live in the world and he's one of the richest people in it.
Right.
His picture is in the newspaper.
Sure.
I would have recognized Steve Jobs maybe from in a photo, but if he had walked by me, probably wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is notable.
Quite.
It's like having a Kardashian walk by you.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even watch the Kardashians, but if Kim Kardashian walked by me, I've been walked by Kardashians. I've noticed every time.
Yeah.
They've never snuck by me. That's why I feel like this is a commentary on his sort of like celebrity persona more than anything
else. Donald Trump's hair is to Donald Trump as Kim Kardashian's ass is to Kim Kardashian. Basically.
And that is why I contend that it's really important that we get to the bottom of Bobby Pin Gate.
Yes, I agree.
This is all a long preamble for me to stress the importance of understanding what happened with these bobby pins in Mexico and why.
And now there are people who are contending that there were not actual bobby pins there.
There's some indication that the photos might have been doctored. There is some indication by people who are stylists and were interviewed by Yahoo News, the very important website that we, or the very important news source that we got this story from, that say that whether or not the photos were doctored, the presence of the clump of hair that looks like the pin that allowed the photo to be doctored indicates that there was too much product in his hair.
Yes.
And B, he has dumb hair regardless of whether or not there were bobby pins in it.
What was that quote from the one stylist?
I don't know who his stylist is, but he has a terrible haircut. It doesn't look like he's had a cut in 2 months, though obviously he keeps it long to mask the thinning in his crown. And then she goes on to say, I've never known a man in my entire life to ever wear a bobby pin in his hair. And if somebody left them in there by accident, he's probably
going to
fire them.
Oh, he's definitely going to fire them.
Oh, yeah.
He might have them, like, removed from Earth.
I'm just confused. If the photos were not doctored, the original press photos don't show the bobby pin, but they do show a clump, a like weird clump of hair.
Well,
who was responsible for that clump of hair? And how did that, he usually has such a cloud-like consistency to his hair.
I know.
How did a clump form?
I don't know.
I mean, it's really concerning.
Yeah, I know. I want to go back
Mexican
to
water.
I know, right? I want to go back to just sort of like a previous point that we were talking about why we want to get to the bottom of this whole thing. Trump is also obsessed with his own hair.
Well, right. This is a priority of his.
Hillary Clinton doesn't go around talking about her new fancy haircuts.
No.
Donald Trump is, like, pulling people out of audiences to, like, pull his hair to, like, prove that it is... Like, this is a thing that he is also obsessed with.
Yeah, this is one of his priorities.
If I were to believe that any male ever in the history of life would be walking around trying to get his hair to do things with bobby pins,
it would be Donald Trump, obviously. Yeah. No, and that's why this story really struck a chord with everyone.
Exactly.
Because it was so believable.
Totally.
Of course Donald Trump has bobby pins in his hair.
First it was shocking. Yeah. And then it was like, well,
of course.
Duh.
And then it was fascinating.
It was a roller coaster.
It's a roller coaster of emotions.
Bobby pin story.
Pingate has been really an important part of the week.
Certainly has.
Fascinating and very telling.
Yeah.
Another important part of the week was, okay, first of all, there is a group called Latinos for Trump. And there is a guy named Marco Gutierrez, who's the resident idiot of Latinos for Trump.
Are these the same people who...
His surrogate from
that
group.
Are these the same people who had the signs at the RNC that the Spanish was wrong?
Yes.
Do you remember
this? Yes, I do.
I don't remember what they said, but like it was like not a correct...
It was not a grammatically correct... No, well, of course. Who would have proofread it for them?
No, of course not. And they were all being held by white people. Like,
yeah, well, yes. Every because there were a lot of Spanish language signs for Trump being appearing all of a sudden in the auditorium at the RNC. And all of them, because everything there had to be held by white people because there were only white people there. There were literally 18 black delegates and a sort of equally low number of any other minority delegate. So they all signs in any language had to be held. I mean, if the signs had been in Swahili, they also would have been held by white people.
White people.
Because that was all that was the only option.
The only option.
In any case, so Marco Gutierrez is on MSNBC talking to Joanne Reed.
Yeah.
And
who, by the way, is doing a bang-up job this election cycle, Joanne
which
Reed. I'm really
is not something I
living
expected from Joanne Reed.
For her. Sometimes she's
like
maybe
medium
a little...
Okay,
sometimes she was a little bit more dismissive of Sanders than I would have personally cared for. But she is
bringing it to the general,
Yes, and she's like not... she's not around to take anybody's shit.
Yeah.
Joanne Reed. She doesn't have time for it. Our next Soledad O'Brien.
Oh. I feel like...
Well, did you actually... Oh, and it's not on the doc.
Soledad was out there.
Right. She got interviewed by CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And she railed on that.
On how they had helped basically create the Trump presidency.
Presidency and the white nationalist movement.
Yeah.
She blamed them for normalizing white nationalism. Soledad O'Brien.
She gets it, you guys.
She's a getter.
Yeah, she's a getter. I mean, she was one of our early... sort of
loves on this podcast.
Yeah. It's, we talked about her all the time in our first and second season.
Because she was the one person who was on CNN. And then she disappeared largely because
she left CNN.
Right.
And then we were sad and we had a little bit of a hard time adjusting to that.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Yeah. Maybe it could be Joanne Reed.
Yeah. I mean, I need it to be somebody.
Someone
has to be out there doing something. Not currently anyone who's there.
No.
It's not anyone who I've already thought of.
No.
In any case. So Marco Gutierrez, he's on MSNBC. He's talking to Joanne Reed and says, "My culture is a very dominant culture, and it's imposing and causing problems. If you don't do something about it, you're going to have taco trucks on every corner."
I said, delicious.
I mean, we live in Southern California where there already are taco trucks in every corner.
Right.
And it's a joy.
And this is a thing that
we love. This is a dream come true. Like, this is one of the great things about Southern California.
A trip to a late night taco truck
is all that you can ask for in the world.
Totally.
I mean, that's, first of all, tacos are one of the greatest fast food inventions
beyond
in world
they're the greatest
history.
Street food
they're the greatest
they're
street
the best
food.
Walking food
they're the best walking have. Food especially like we like in New York City I would contend that the halal truck is sort of the equivalent where there's one on every corner there's literally one on every on in my neighborhood in New York there is a halal truck on every single corner and they smell delicious and it's great walking food and it's fun to go to a halal truck and get some shawarma or whatever. The taco truck movement is to LA what the shawarma truck the halal truck movement is to New York. It is an important piece of Los Angeles, you know, culture life. And life.
Yeah.
And I would contend that literally everyone in America would be happier and better served if there was a taco truck.
They don't know it.
They don't know it yet. Not everywhere has had access to good tacos.
That's very true.
You know, it's hard. A lot of places have bad tacos, so you don't know what you're missing.
That's right.
In any case, the Washington Post took this comment very seriously and decided to get to the bottom of what it would mean for the economy if there was a taco truck in every corner.
Guess what? It would be killer.
Great boon.
Yeah.
They ran into a little trouble because the first thing they did
they had to figure out how many
was
intersections
try to figure out how many intersections there are so we could find out how many taco trucks this would actually mean.
Right.
They sort of took some numbers, put some numbers together that put the number of intersections at about 3.2 million. That would have given us, they estimated, about 9.6 million new jobs.
Right.
They're assuming 3 staff members per taco truck.
Yeah.
They say that that also doesn't include the ancillary job creation, like mechanics and gas station workers and management executives for Mexican food truck companies and things like that. Hilariously, they noted that we'd probably have to increase immigration issues to make this happen.
It would get us to full employment.
It would get us to full employment, though, for sure.
Yeah.
It might drive the wages down in the service sector a little because it would replace some of the demand for higher cost food options.
Sure.
So that's a concerning element of it.
That's already going down anyway.
But that's already
right
going
now,
down anyway.
Because people don't have any money.
Exactly. And also, then everyone would have access to cheap and delicious tacos, which is at least something that you can do when you have a low-wage job, so you can eat tacos.
Yeah.
In any case, that's concerning, but at least we're ahead of the curve on that, so we know what to expect, and we can figure out how to head that off. Then a dedicated reader pulled, they had an update to the article, and someone had pulled a more specific number from the Census Bureau, which put the number of intersections at 21.5 million,
oh my.
Which increases
that
every...
3 million seems low,
it seems
doesn't
low.
It?
We have 50 states. There are 52 million people in Southern California right now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of towns in America where basically only one person lives on every block.
This is so true.
In any case, that would increase everything that we just said by a factor of 7.
Yeah.
Which means 63 million new jobs.
Yeah.
That, we'd have to get some immigrants in here stat.
We'd basically have to open the borders at that point.
We'd have to open the borders, and we'd basically have to make all of Mexico come here.
Right. Just to serve us tacos.
Just so that the taco truck situation didn't fall apart. So in any case... This all sounds perfect.
I'm in.
I mean, I'm totally in. If the only quote-unquote destructive thing that will happen if Hillary Clinton becomes president is that taco truck will appear on every corner.
Have you seen that?
Sign me up for that.
Have you seen that meme that people have been posting that's like a real like low-rent graphic animation of like all of these taco trucks spreading like wildfire like up from Mexico through the United States. It's like really funny. I've been seeing it on Facebook a lot recently.
Yeah, this was like accidentally the greatest meme creation
it was
in America.
And MSNBC, by the way, was really running with this, too. I mean, they couldn't stop playing this.
This is great. First of all, talk about a talking point that will convince millennials to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I know.
If millennials love nothing more than food trucks. A promise of a taco truck on every corner. Like a food truck that they can eat that's ironically like cheap but still delicious and like is on their corner. That's basically millennial catnip. I mean.
Totally.
What else could we ask for? So in any case. Then there were more Trump shenanigans. This was Trump himself, who has decided his outreach to African Americans has been pretty abysmal so far.
Yeah,
he tried to make a speech in a 93% white community about how black people should vote for him.
Right, because their lives are in shambles.
Everything's going. So what do they have to lose?
Right. Yeah.
And so he decided that hadn't been effective
because
that didn't really increase his polling with African Americans.
Right.
So instead,
he decided to go to Detroit with well-loved black person Ben Carson.
Yes.
I mean, could he have found a black person that was probably more roundly hated by other black people than Ben Carson?
I don't think he could have. Because if he had done this 10 years ago, that would have been a really effective strategy. Ben Carson used to be beloved by everyone because Gifted Hands, his autobiography, was like basically required reading.
That was before we
most public schools
knew that he thought the pyramids were grain silos.
Exactly.
I mean,
it was before the heyday of Ben Carson insanity.
Right. Yeah.
But in his current incarnation, Ben Carson's not all that popular with the African-American community.
No.
He's actually sort of an embarrassment.
By the way, related note about Ben Carson, which I saw a clip of earlier this morning. So as part of this trip, we'll get back to the details of Trump at the church in a second. But as part of this trip, Ben Carson took Donald Trump to his childhood home.
Really?
And they met with the person who was there. They showed them the outside of the house and whatever. And Ben Carson is being interviewed by CNN. And they're like, how's your trip going? Whatever. And he goes, oh, my gosh, my luggage. And then, just hightails it out of there. Like, sprints away from the CNN viewer who, looks at the camera and is basically like, all right, well, I guess Dr. Carson is off to get his luggage. literally smack in the middle of an interview outside of his childhood home on CNN.
Oh, man.
I highly suggest you look this up because it's genius.
That sums up everything
about
the Trump campaign and Ben Carson that it possibly
could. And this trip to Detroit.
Yeah. So they go, this is the first time he's going to speak to, in a black church, to an audience that's not mostly comprised of white people.
Right.
So he took a slightly different approach this time. Instead of just lecturing black voters about how they have nothing to lose by voting for him because things are so shitty anyway.
He had a speech this time.
Right.
So
I think previously
at those events where he was trying to do outreach, there was probably either a note in the prompter that was African-American outreach or someone from his campaign had been like, tell African-Americans they should vote for you or something like that.
Right. And the party's telling us you need black voters.
Right. Exactly.
So in any case, he takes a slightly different approach. He talks about how the nation is divided and that leaders aren't going to communities outside of their own. And so they're not talking to them and learning what their needs are and whatever. And because he's made one trip to Ben Carson's childhood home,
he is an
expert in the needs of the black community all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's all of a sudden got a civil rights plan for our time. Well, he doesn't have it, but
I believe we need a civil rights agenda for our time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he could possibly mean by that.
Look for that on Hillary Clinton's website.
Exactly. Don't check Trump.com for that. He said, I fully understand that the African American community has suffered from discrimination and that there are many wrongs that still must be made right. They will be made right. No details on how.
No.
And no details on how this jibes with his law and order platform that he promised us at the RNC, which seemed pretty obviously designed to exclusively benefit white Americans at the loss of every other, at the expense of every other community in America.
Right.
But okay, Donald Trump.
Sure.
Sure. Let's take a walk down memory lane, though, for just a moment to remind our listeners and all of people.
Yeah, let's do that.
That the Trump family is sort of famous for their racism.
Yeah, this was how his father...
If you wonder how the Trump family made their millions,
we've
said this before on the podcast, they built public housing in New York. Fred Trump was also a developer, and he took money from the government.
Fred Trump, the one who gave Donald Trump his tiny $1 million loan to get started.
Right, in the 70s or whatever it was, when $1 million could buy you most of Manhattan.
Of New York. Right.
In 1973, the Department of Justice sued Trump management for discriminating against blacks in buildings they owned. A former Trump superintendent had testified that he was instructed to attach a piece of paper with the letter C for colored on applications by African-Americans to live in their buildings. And they wound up signing an agreement in 1975 to desegregate their properties. But that was after Trump had already, Donald had already come into the company.
Right.
So Donald... Trump
and after they'd already been in trouble for it, so they basically had to.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, but they didn't do it voluntarily.
You might remember on the podcast we talked about Woody Guthrie writing a song about this.
Yes.
Because Trump's family management company was famous for redlining.
Yes.
Like, famous for it. So they took tons of public money, they made their fortune in public money, and then they did not do with that public money as you are supposed to do and provide right. access to low-income and middle-income housing for New Yorkers. They instead only provided access to that for white New Yorkers.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump has a lot of nerve talking about the civil rights agenda of our time.
Right.
The civil rights agenda of our time shouldn't have begun with redlining.
No, it shouldn't.
We should be at a time right now right. where we start in a place where African-American home renters should be able to just rent a home they can afford.
That's right.
In any building. Yep. And yet Donald Trump is not from that tradition.
No, he's not.
He comes from a tradition of not even allowing that. So good luck, Donald Trump, with that. Meanwhile, if you were thinking things were all hunky-dory for Clinton just because Donald Trump had such a dumb week, you're wrong, because she had a terrible week also.
She had a terrible week.
And this will be the memorable terrible week. We'll remember Trump's bobby pins, and then we'll remember the email dramas of Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Because...
The FBI released their notes of their interview with her. And
the slow trickle of this... She didn't
know much.
Anything.
She didn't have very many answers for the FBI.
No. That's how I think why they were like, we can't really indict her. She didn't know what the fuck she was doing.
No.
She was innocent in the sense that she had no idea what was going on.
She couldn't possibly incriminate herself because she had literally zero information about anything that she was asked.
Right. We can't prove anything criminal went on because she doesn't know what went on. She doesn't remember taking any training on classification procedures.
No.
She couldn't remember key details. At least 39 times she said things like, I do not recall or I do not remember in response to specific questions about process and training for the, you know, for classifying or for dealing with classified emails and things like that. She basically claims that she didn't have even a basic understanding of classification procedures and that her staff was who she relied on to tell her how to deal with classified
information. This is really upsetting to me because I got to thinking about this and I was actually... talking to my roommate, who's a big Hillary Clinton supporter, and he brought up what I thought, at least initially, was a good point. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, well, that's a ridiculous point. Because he said, if you've listened to Serial podcast...
You have, because you're American.
You have. Right. There was they basically opened that podcast with, like, him not being able to remember Adnan, not being able to remember what happened on that day. And there's this premise that, like... if nothing extraordinary happened on a specific day, like 10 years ago, which is basically when this was, that's when she would have been giving her training. It would have been in 2008 or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Then you wouldn't remember something like that happening. But the problem with that, and I was like, oh, yeah, well, that's actually true. Like, how I don't know what training I got at work. Like, I probably got told what I wasn't supposed to put in my email.
How many times have you taken sexual harassment training and not
exactly.
recalled what was
no
sexual
idea.
Harassment?
But the problem with that is that, like, she... the fact that she doesn't know these answers, like when she is going to meet with the FBI, is just what adds to her sort of like flippantness about it. Because like she could, before she met with the FBI, I'm assuming she probably could have looked back like at a calendar or a meeting invite or something like that. Yeah. Like it just, the answers, the fact that she didn't know so many things to me leads me to believe that she chose to not know a lot of these things.
Well, and that's because what I think a lot of this reads as, because it talks about how she sort of actively didn't understand classification procedures. She relied very heavily on her staff to explain it over and over and over again.
Right.
It's like, and Adnan didn't have a staff
To
remember that day 10 years ago. He was just a guy in high school at the time.
Yeah.
Like, this
she
is
had
a woman
an assistant
who had
probably
an assistant
knows
and a large
when she
staff.
Did that. Right.
She has documentation of things.
Yeah.
She has also, she was the fucking Secretary of State,
right.
and classification procedures are probably a pretty important part of that job. So these are not just random events in a series of events. These are all, and by the time she took this interview, they knew that this was a scandal. They knew that
course.
This was a problem.
I mean, she just met with the FBI. That was like basically the last weekend before they came out with their ruling. So like we had already had years, or at least a full solid year where she could have had somebody tell her whether she took this training or not.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't get how she could have gone into an interview with the FBI about possibly being fucking indicted on criminal charges.
Right, and not known anything.
And not known a single answer to a question that they were going to
ask. Well, I'm sure that was her strategy, to not know anything. But it makes, I mean, I think that at this point, by the time she met with them, this was not a scandal to be flippant about anymore, because it was a slow death to her political
career.
But she
always has been, and that has been everybody's problem with it. Because, like, even you and I, who I think mostly think there's not much there.
Ultimately, but, even like, care about this.
It has the problem that so many people on the left, and also obviously on the right. I mean, the right thinks that she is a criminal and should be indicted, and they spent all the RNC talking about that they should lock her up. I don't agree with that.
No,
but it makes me just want to pull my hair out that she just hasn't figured out like the answers to these questions yet. Yeah. She's not an idiot.
No, I know.
I just don't get it.
This is the Clintons are repeatedly kind of murdered in slow death form politically by things like this.
Yeah, totally.
And so
it's their MO.
This is their MO. And it frustrates me that she has not. I mean, maybe this is the strategy they've settled on.
Right.
But it frustrates me.
I mean, they've been doing it for decades.
They are playing with our future. Like, if she was not our current nominee for president,
exactly.
I certainly wouldn't care what was in those emails. No. Because I did not feel that as Secretary of State, when she was Secretary of State, I was not worried about what she was up to or anything like that.
Yeah.
I am frustrated that this is sort of reflecting on our prospects for having a Trump presidency. And this is what we've said again and again. The reason that we were so concerned about Hillary Clinton, the reason we're not Clinton supporters, is not just because we don't agree with her on policy issues, but because we feel like she does not take seriously our charge. You know, Clinton supporters will often say to us, but, you know, if you don't vote for her, you don't want a Trump presidency, do you? You're ushering in a Trump presidency by not voting for her. And I always feel like by supporting her in the primary, you put us as close to a Trump presidency as you could have.
Yeah.
I mean, this is as close as we're going to get. So, you know,
we're going to get to some polls here
pretty
soon.
We're getting really fucking close.
Prove our point.
But beyond that, it also came to light that the company that was maintaining her private server had actually deleted a bunch of these emails that they deleted after the ruling came out that said that they wanted to search through these emails.
Right. So there was supposedly Clinton had told, well, by way of Cheryl Mills,
told a worker at Platte River Networks, which
was
this company
who was keeping the server, told them that they didn't want these emails retained past 60 days.
Right. So Clinton's email was not supposed to be retained beyond 60 days.
So
she told them to reset the retention policy on the email account.
But what happened was,
he didn't do it.
Right. So, but that individual whose name has been redacted told the FBI that he realized that he had failed to set that system up until after the New York Times broke the story and then did it retroactively.
Yeah.
So a lot of emails.
And that happened twice, by the way. Yeah. It was two times that he retroactively erased her emails.
He said he had an oh shit moment.
He had two oh shit moments, in fact, he described it as.
Yeah.
Because there was another moment in 2015 where he deleted an archive mailbox after a preservation order from the House Benghazi Committee.
Oh, boy.
So, like,
yikes.
This is not great.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of how this reads, again, I don't ultimately care what's in the emails.
Well,
I am frustrated by how sort of like, how it's like every layer of this is like a Monty Python style bungle.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that we found out too is that,
you know,
one of the things that Clinton likes to use as proof that she didn't do anything wrong is that the two previous secretaries of state, specifically Colin Powell, both used private email servers. But we now know that Colin Powell warned her about using this private email system
said that it could be required to be part of public record.
Right.
They were talking specifically about using a BlackBerry.
Right.
The BlackBerry was required to
be
on a private
email server. Because the thing about Colin
Powell,
and we all knew that, you know, those two secretary of states were really just getting email use started, basically.
Yeah.
Like, they were basically, like, trying to just get the State Department, like, with
to
the
use
times,
emails.
Basically.
Yeah.
So Colin Powell was not sorting through classified information on his personal email server and then passing it around to people, because, like, that's not what they were, they weren't doing that. Like, that's not what they were up to.
Yeah.
Like, they were probably scheduling meetings with their email. Yeah. They were. I don't know what they were doing. I'm just guessing so as to what they were doing.
He warned Clinton that if it became public that she had a BlackBerry that she was using to do business, that could become official record.
Right.
So the fact that they didn't preserve all the emails on that private server, knowing that he had warned her that those could be considered public record,
right,
is sort of concerning.
And this was before she even
before she started using
before the BlackBerry. She set it up.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he said, be very careful. I got around it all by not saying much and not using systems that captured the data. So he basically tells her, I only used email for dumb shit.
Yeah.
I didn't use email for important things.
Right.
So she said, first of all, that that Powell's comments did not factor into her decision to use a personal email account. So she ignored them. But also, there were at least 13 mobile devices that got used over this time because they kept trying to buy her. They kept trying to buy her a new BlackBerry, and then she kept asking to return to the old one because she didn't know how to use the new BlackBerry. So repeatedly,
we know that from her emails.
Right, they kept trying to give her new BlackBerries, and she didn't know how to use them, so she would request her old BlackBerry again.
Right.
So they resorted to doing things like destroying these BlackBerries with hammers and things like. Truly, we literally mean that there were at least two that were destroyed by hammers because they were left
making that up
with all of these BlackBerries with classified information on them that they didn't know how to dispose of.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it turned out that she was storing her BlackBerry in her desk drawer. First of all, you're not allowed to use mobile phones inside of the Pentagon or the State Department. I know this not only from reading the article about this, but also from having friends who work there who can't talk on their phone during the day.
Sure.
It's frustrating. Sometimes you're trying to make plans with those people and they can't answer your texts until 6 o'clock. So I'm well aware of the rules in a lot of government offices about using your mobile phone.
Yeah.
And her offices were one of the offices where you weren't allowed to use mobile phones inside of the office. So the fact that she was storing her mobile phone in an unsecured location in an office where she wasn't supposed to be using a mobile phone to use her private email server to do official business. It's just so many layers of stupid. I can't even.
It is. It really has like it has like when you put all of these pieces together, it really has like a sort of like Mr. Bean or like Mr. Magoo style thing.
I mean, there's reasons
like,
that she keeps
in a sort of upsetting way. But
coming.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Like it just feels like it has to be. Like, it can't be real.
Feels like it can't be real. Yeah.
But here we are.
And if you're wondering why we're extra mad at her this week, it's because the Times published a big story. Because we haven't known where she is. She's sort of missing.
Right.
She doesn't make public appearances. She doesn't give press conferences.
Right. And here's the thing that I think that is upsetting about this is that, and you and I have talked about this a lot on the podcast, is that she is running a campaign that is not where we are in our campaigns right now, apparently.
Exactly.
She's running a campaign that would have that her husband would have run. Or even, honestly, to a degree that President Obama would have run.
Yeah.
But the classic thing that you do is in August, at the end of August,
you go fundraise.
Nobody is paying attention to anything. It's the end of summer. People are on vacations. In this instance, we're coming down from our Olympics.
Our
glow.
Olympic high.
You're going to pool parties. You don't give a shit about what's going on. But Donald Trump is out there
making every
news headline while Hillary Clinton has like been practicing for debates, which I get you're supposed to do. And she's been raising money. And I also get that you need money to run a campaign. When was the last time that you heard
her speak
like,
about anything
from her
anywhere?
Like in public?
Never.
It hasn't been since the DNC.
You know when the last time a lot of really wealthy people heard from her? In the last couple weeks. Because
that's where she's been.
That's where she's been. The Times basically was like, she is running a campaign where she's, first of all, portraying Trump as an out-of-touch billionaire.
Right.
Where she has been talking about reshuffling the deck in favor of the middle class. That's her term. But at this moment, for the last month at least, and for much longer, ultimately, she's only been fielding questions from the wealthiest Americans.
Yeah. She hasn't had a press conference in almost 300 days.
She's not been answering questions from the public, but she's going to private fundraisers, which are also her close friends, because her close friends are billionaires, they're not us, and been taking questions in exchange for money from those billionaires, and has not answered a single question from the American people at large through the media or any other forum.
No.
Since December. And that is a problem when the issue, when income inequality and the, you know, the sort of like job loss and, you know, free trade and issues like that are the defining issues of the election. If you want to call Trump an out-of-touch billionaire, fine.
Yeah,
he is one.
I get that.
I don't think that you can say that you're anything different if you've only been talking to out-of-touch billionaires. Right. And all of the questions that you're answering to encourage people to get out the vote for you are to billionaires and millionaires. Only rich people are getting to ask you questions.
Yeah.
First of all, then you don't know what the concerns of anyone are.
Right.
But second of all, it's going to be like, I guarantee at some point some Mitt Romney, you know, 47% comment is going to pop out of here.
Oh, I'm sure.
Where, I mean, that was what got him in trouble was he was speaking to small rooms of rich people and he was saying things.
Well, this is what everyone thinks is going to be in the transcripts of
where
her.
Everyone's worst fears.
Yeah. I mean, this is not new. It's just as upsetting. But right. I mean, this is an ongoing.
It's an ongoing thing, but it's, this was going to be in her transcripts from the bank speeches too.
Right.
But I mean, this is at this point in the cycle, in such a bizarre cycle, in such a concerning cycle,
like,
in a cycle
not...
where she almost got beat by a democratic socialist.
Yeah.
This is not your strategy.
Right.
If you want to talk, you have to, I get it. You're talking to the billionaires, you're raising the money.
Right.
You got to get out there and talk to people too.
Yeah.
You can't, you,
and,
for every
even,
billionaire fundraiser you go to, you got to go to an underfunded school somewhere
or you gotta
and
do
really talk to people.
Or
there.
You got to do something to remind people why they think that you would be, you know, she likes to talk about how Donald Trump is basically like unhinged, and I would agree with her wholeheartedly on that. But like, you also have to give them a reason. Like, if Piñanetta invited her down there, I don't know why she didn't go the day after he did.
Fucking go.
Like, because I realize she doesn't probably think that she like needs to, but like, that would have stolen the news cycle from him. Nobody would have been talking about that speech that he gave that night, and she would have gone down there. And those are the types of things where she actually like does a good job. I mean, like, we would have all been talking about like, oh yes, that's who we want to be president. But like, she's not in the game.
And here's what's happening as a result. So the polling's getting closer.
It's getting
much
closer.
But the polling is not getting closer because more people are voting for Donald Trump.
No, that's what's fascinating.
The polling
all of these
for Trump is staying consistent. The polling for Clinton has been going up and down.
And this is consistent in all polls, too. I mean, the Rasmussen poll, the LA Times poll, the Reuters Daily Tracking poll, every single poll has gotten closer, and it's all, the only fluctuations are like wide, insane fluctuations for Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been ahead by 12, 15 points, and then she'll now only be ahead by 1 or 2 points. There's even a national poll that had
tied.
A couple, and Trump ahead.
Yeah.
2 and 3 in some of the daily tracking polls because those are just, you know, like they're
asking
every day. And he had
LA Times and Reuters have both shown
he didn't have a great week this week, but at least he was the only person.
But he was in the news.
He was in
the news.
People
remembered who he was.
Exactly.
If you're,
right?
Like, who knows where Hillary Clinton's been? We haven't
forgotten
heard from her
that
in
she's
months.
Running for president.
Yeah.
So I just.
And
I mean,
and also her like, lead is coming down very significantly in a lot of battleground states, which is also
concerning because like,
and we, by the way, Johnson and Stein collectively are polling like 15%.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. And we have, you know, usually what people say is don't pay attention to the national polls. And you're right.
Sure.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
But like,
so let's talk about state polls.
So let's talk about state polls because there are some scary state polls that just came out this week because she has already pulled, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how they felt so confident about Virginia. They pulled all of their advertising money out
of
Virginia.
That's why Tim Kaine became her running mate. It's why, I mean, she's Virginia unlocked. Terry McAuliffe is her BFF. Her running mate is from Virginia. Like, she's basically BFFs with every governor and former governor of the state.
Two separate polls have that within 1 or 2 points. The
like,
margin
that's
of error
not right.
basically tied. That was polling as literally as recently as weeks ago had her up double digits there.
And Pennsylvania,
same with
she's
Pennsylvania,
now only up by 3 to 5%.
Depending
she
on what
up,
poll you look at. So there's multiple, these aren't outlier polls.
Right. These are, we're talking about averages from a large number of polls. She was up by double digits a little while ago there
in
too.
In Pennsylvania. Same with Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Anywhere between 3 and 5 in Wisconsin.
Right.
A big uptick in Wisconsin for both Johnson and Stein recently.
What?
And those were people that left Clinton. Again, Trump basically staying where
Wisconsin's
he's at.
Wisconsin's a confusing
like,
state, you guys. I see third parties like aren't a crazy off the table notion for them.
No, it's not. And that's one of that's
they're a fluctuating state. They vary wildly from like super far left to like Scott Walker.
And if I remember correctly too, I don't have it in front of us, but the I believe that was the state that had Stein at her highest. I believe she was like at 7 or 8 because the population centers in Wisconsin, which granted aren't that big, but they're super progressive, which is odd, but True.
Yeah. No, Wisconsin's a weird place, you guys. It's the birth of the union movement, and it's a place where Scott Walker is the governor. So it's a lot going on.
5 percentage points Michigan. In Michigan. Again,
he's up in Iowa right now.
Had been double digits. Iowa has always been close, which is upsetting to me. But I mean, a tie in Ohio, Iowa's falling which apart. Is not good.
The loss of Tom Harkin has really fucked everything up for you guys.
I know. It has.
But yeah, Ohio is a state that... Tied. She really needs to win, and it's tied.
Yep. He's back up in Arizona, which we sort of, that's not wildly surprising, but she had been catching up, and also, there were even a couple of weeks ago, there were some polls that had her up by like very small margins, but she's not any
Arizona
longer.
Arizona is a state that should be in play.
For sure.
Like, this is absurd that Arizona is, Arizona's supposed to be in play this year.
Right.
Last time it wasn't really in play.
No.
This time it's in play.
Right.
If she can't fucking get a border state that has an enormous Latino population to vote for her against Donald Trump, a man who wants to deport most of their friends.
Right.
Like,
I know.
This is, like,
It's
too much.
Now,
it's too mean. It's too insane.
Now that we've terrified you about these polls, the one thing that is good about these polls is the fact
her numbers can move up.
That it's hers are the only numbers that seem to be moving. Trump's are like, go 1 or 2 percentage points. Yeah. So this was the same thing
we saw with Sanders and Clinton in the primaries.
That's true.
You know, her numbers weren't moving in the primaries.
That's
they didn't
true.
Move till the very end. His numbers were the ones that were fluctuating.
Right.
And as people became more familiar with him,
his
numbers went up. So she doesn't have the same wiggle room that a better candidate would.
But she's got to at least feel good that she can reconvince these people.
Yeah.
Because they 2 weeks ago said that they supported her.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm sure there's hope.
There's hope
out there, I guess, if you will. But it's not great currently.
It's not great currently.
No.
Sanders was on Meet the Press yesterday and said that the threshold to get into the debates is too high, which I'm sure the DNC is not happy about.
I'm sure he got a phone call as soon as he walked off the air.
He was probably like, fuck you then.
Doesn't
Goodbye.
Give two shits.
Nope.
Yeah.
He left the party the day after.
And also, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. No. He's not wrong at all. That is too high.
Yeah.
Johnson and Stein should be in these debates.
Johnson and Stein should be in these debates. And as much as I love Jill Stein, mostly, I mean, she's got her problems.
Right.
Don't we all?
Right.
As
but
candidates.
I mean,
Sanders had his problems.
Exactly.
And I loved him, too. He had
as much
gun
as
problems,
she is the candidate I most connect with in this cycle. And
but, like, if you are a person who, she's currently the person who has won more votes as a female candidate for president than anyone. Obviously, Hillary will beat that this year, whether she wins or loses. But, like, she is an actual candidate. She ran for president once. She is on enough ballots in enough states that she could win the Electoral College.
The
I
American
understand that
get a
she probably
to hear
won't.
Her debate
but,
with the other candidates.
But I really wholeheartedly believe that Gary Johnson and Bill Weld should be in those debates.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of whether you agree with them or don't agree with them, but they are serious people. And, like, you could make a debate that maybe Jill Stein isn't quite as serious of a person. I mean, I love her. But, like, they're both former governors.
I think
he has run as a Republican candidate himself.
Yeah.
They are nearing that 15%.
Yeah.
Like, our democracy would do better to have both of those two in that debate. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. And
these are all candidates with a national profile. These are all candidates who not only like are polling in high enough numbers that they could disrupt the two-party plan.
Right.
But also
but it's the two-party plan that has set the system in place.
Exactly.
I mean, the reason that this 15% threshold exists was because the Republicans and the Democrats got together to form this commission.
By the way, these are all national parties. The Green Party and the Libertarian Party run people in local elections.
They do.
They have elected officials at the local level.
Right.
Regardless of what
Dan Savage said in his takedown of Jill Stein, where he was like, the Green Party only shows up to run in a presidential
the
election every 4 years.
The Green Party has won mayorships. They run candidates
We have a mayor in a pretty decent-sized town here in California. They're on school boards. They're on city councils.
They run in most major races.
Of course.
They have the backing of a national party to run in those races. They are polling at enough of a percent that they are a part of the discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not random parties.
No, they're not.
These are big national parties.
Yeah.
And the only reason that they're not polling higher is because they are not being given the same access as everyone else.
Right.
If CNN felt it was appropriate to have a town hall with Jill Stein, then she is a serious contender enough to be in a debate.
Yes.
If they felt it was important that Gary Johnson be in a town hall, then he is enough of a contender to be in the debates.
Yeah.
Like, these are actual contenders for president. that doesn't just, I mean, do most of us think Donald Trump probably can't win? Yeah, but he's going to be allowed in the debates.
I know.
So, like, I don't see
what he's not a serious candidate. No,
Martin O'Malley was allowed in the debates to be in the primary. He was never really a serious candidate. No.
Like, neither was Lincoln Chafee.
No, he exactly. He was in a debate. What's his face, whose name I don't even remember? Jim Webb was in a debate, for God's sake. I've never even heard of anyone who was
in a debate. He was in a Democratic debate, and he's a Republican.
Exactly. I mean,
so it seems to be,
who's harmed?
The primary debates seem to be lawless.
Exactly. So, I mean. But I mean, I think that these are candidates that are part of the national discussion without being in the debate. And if you are a part of the national discussion without being in the debate, you should be in the debate. If you're polling above 1% nationally, then you have a lot of fucking people voting for you.
Yeah.
And that deserves a place in the debate.
I think the threshold should be if you're on enough ballots to win.
Yeah, I agree too.
Because for third-party candidates to get on these ballots,
it's a lot of work. And you need a national organization.
It's a lot of effing work.
You need a national organization to do
it.
It's
a lot of work.
You can't do it by yourself.
No.
So you have to be part of a legitimate national party to be on enough ballots to win. I think that's actually a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't know why people aren't listening to you more.
I don't either.
It's crazy.
It's upsetting is what it is.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah. On a related note, speaking of Virginia, we just gave you poll numbers from there. Richmond, Virginia, which is the fifth biggest city in the state, 200,000 people, their editorial board endorsed
for their paper
endorsed Johnson and Weld.
It's crazy what's happening out there, you guys.
They have nuts. A long history of endorsing the Republicans. It's a little bit of a conservative editorial board, but like they found Trump to be unacceptable and they were like, third party, fuck it.
Yeah, he is, so they're right.
Yeah.
Speaking of the debates, by the way, their moderators were announced this week, and so we have those. It's like,
I mean, you know, whatever.
I have a few quibbles with this. One of which is, I just want Gwen Ifill to be the moderator for all the debates.
I agree.
I feel like she brings a calm air and gravitas to the debates.
I agree.
And they never let her do anything but the VP debates. And she's not even doing that this time.
No. I also wish they would let Rachel Maddow, but I understand why that would probably be unacceptable to people.
Exactly. So they're doing one with Lester Holt.
Yeah.
They're doing one, that's NBC's. ABC's will have Martha Raddatz. She did one last time, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
And she did really well.
Oh, no, I think she did the
VP
one last time. Because I think they all, didn't they say that these are all first time?
Yes, they did.
Presidential.
They did. Like, the Times said that.
Yeah.
But she was in, she did one of the debates,
she's
but
done
it was the VP
before.
Debate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was. I think it was the VP.
Also, all of them have done primary debates, too. So it's not like they're just like showing up and not knowing what
they're not
doing.
Nobody's. Chris Wallace is doing one of the presidential debates.
Yeah.
A Fox News moderator.
Yeah.
And then also Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, he's doing the one with Martha Raddatz.
Right. Oh, yeah, they're doing it together. Yeah. And then the VP debate is going to be Elaine Quijano.
Yes.
Do I know her?
She's on
CBSN.
She's the first person that they've ever had from like a digital news source.
That's
why
I don't know
her. She's also the first Asian American moderator.
Right.
Anderson Cooper is the first gay moderator. And
I would contend
Gwen Ifill is the Lester Holt is the first African American since 1992 to do a presidential one. Gwen Ifill,
Gwen
as we
Ifill
mentioned,
has been
has
doing
done the VP ones.
But Gwen Ifill,
I love Gwen
should
Ifill.
Be doing all of them.
I agree. She's great.
I just feel like, first of all, I feel like PBS people should be doing all of them.
Yeah,
because that's our national public
or Candy
broadcasting.
Crowley
or Candy Crowley.
Somebody who can fact check
on
the
spot.
Fly.
Yeah, I want to see someone who has all the information in their heads and can calmly but still with enough frustration fact check everyone.
I think Anderson Cooper will be a good enough moderator in the sense that he can probably like keep shit together, but I don't trust him
to know the
facts.
I don't trust him
to have all the facts,
and I trust him to say every other word, and that's gonna bother me.
Agreed.
I don't think he's not a great newscaster, you guys. He's good at going to a place and interviewing people.
Yeah,
that's fine, but he says every 2 seconds.
He does. Yeah.
He's on broadcast news. He's got to get over that.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Now, this will be interesting because Trump has
said previously
that he wanted to... Hillary Clinton, months ago or weeks ago or whenever,
was like,
agreed
I'll do a
to these debates. She's like, I'm doing a debate.
She's not
whatever.
Afraid of a debate.
But Donald Trump, we've told you before, he was mad that one of these was on the night of a football game. And he's been sort of like hinting at sneaking out of these debates, if possible. And one
all
of the things
the
that
better
he,
to have right, the third party candidates
right, exactly,
in there.
Exactly, right?
Right? I mean, make sure she has someone to debate.
Seriously.
For God's sakes.
So he has said that he wanted to wait to see who the moderators are. And now that we know who the moderators are, it'll be interesting to see. He has, but like, who hasn't?
Well, he has beef with everyone who's spoken to him.
Right, exactly. Because they have, every single one of them has like fact checked him either in an interview or in a debate, because a few of these did Republican debates.
Yeah.
But like Chris Wallace.
Even the Fox News guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, well, Chris Wallace, as I have, you know, he's the one person on Fox News that, like, if you want to have somebody ask the, you know,
the question,
semi-hard question,
right,
then you go to Chris Wallace. Yeah. I still...
Was Chris Wallace who did the town halls on Fox News?
I don't remember.
Who did the town halls?
I think Brett Baer
did. Oh, it was Brett Baer. Yeah, he has a dumb face.
He's an idiot. Yeah. He does have a dumb face.
And Republican hair. He looks...
Yeah,
he did. Like someone I don't trust. But he did ask the only question about abortion to the Democrats.
Yeah, he did.
And for that, I appreciate him.
Yeah. But Chris Wallace has previously said, he sort of like famously like did an interview with Trump. And then like when they aired the interview, they like fact checked him like
with graphics,
like while the interview was running. And he was even quoted as saying, "Do I take certain pleasure when I open the gate and he decides to walk down the path and I've got the bear trap at the end of the path?" Yeah, sure. So he is a person who has taken pleasure in like baiting Trump into saying something ridiculous and then like having the facts like on hand to like go at
it. Exactly.
So,
but Holt has pressed Trump in a discussion about Benghazi on his claim that Clinton was asleep.
Right.
And where he said she was asleep at the wheel, whether she was sleeping or not, was how Trump finally responded.
Right.
Who knows if she was sleeping?
Right. But a lot of these moderators have been the people who have gotten him to say some of the dumber things that he has said.
Yeah. Holt also in the same interview asked him for proof about his claim that Hillary's email was hacked.
Yeah.
Said, but is there any evidence it was hacked other than routine phishing? And Trump said, I think I read that and I heard it. And also somebody gave me that information.
And Trump then Holt said where?
Holt said where? And Trump said, I'll report back to you. I'll give it to you. And Holt said, you said it with such certainty. And Trump said, I don't know if certainty. Probably she was hacked.
Probably she was hacked.
Raddatz had grilled him about him calling claiming that John McCain wasn't a war hero because he got caught.
Yeah, she really laid into him, actually.
She said, this seems to be a pattern, Mr. Trump. When you're criticized or attacked, you often respond with name-calling, using terms like dummy, loser, total losers on Twitter and elsewhere. You even demean some people's physical appearance. Is that something you would continue doing if president? Is that the language? Is that language beneath the office of the president?
Yeah.
So in any case.
So it'll be interesting to hear what the official word from the Trump campaign is about these debate moderators. Because if they wanted to claim that they had issues with them, they certainly have things to point to claim issues with them.
Yeah. I mean, but these are all also times that he misspoke or said the wrong thing.
Course.
Not even misspoke.
I mean, it's
like,
not
these are
as
times
if, like,
he asked for it.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I don't know how they're going to
find... Which are all the times.
All the times. Like, he's always asking for
who
it.
Who would be acceptable to him?
I know, exactly. Like, I mean, they...
Like Sean Hannity? Sean Hannity is not going to do one of these debates.
Exactly.
Like, that's just...
Yeah, I was
sorry.
Like, is there someone at Breitbart they could call?
Seriously. Yeah.
Maybe his own campaign manager could do the debate.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Bannon.
If you're wondering if the primaries on the 30th in Florida and Arizona went as terribly as we predicted
we told
they would,
you.
Then...
They did.
They did. So good.
Yeah.
McCain won...
Yeah.
Then immediately was like, tried to disown Trump.
Yeah. Well, and we have...
Which we said he would do.
We told you in one of the many times that we could see the future on this podcast, told you that a lot of people were just waiting to win their primaries.
To get to the hell out of town.
To start talking about how to... Because they needed the Trump voters to get through the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And then now that they're actually running in Arizona, which, as we said, is a purple state, and he's running against a Democrat, he like immediately, like literally the next day, released a video. And he was like...
If Hillary Clinton wins, you'll need someone who will be a check on her, not a rubber stamp like his Democratic opponent
right,
would be.
So he's basically like, he's putting all his money on Trump losing.
Yeah.
Because he's
he's like, elect me because when Hillary wins I'll be
I
the
can
check.
Stop her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz won.
Yeah. Although...
There was not all terrible news here,
It was not all terrible news. We knew... Basically, everybody knew that she was going to win.
She literally represents a district of old Jewish people that are just like her and that are heavily establishment.
And a district that went 2-1 for Hillary Clinton. Yeah. She only won by just shy of 7,000 votes. It was 57-43. So she won by a much, much, much closer margin than Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders in that primary.
Yeah.
And she really... This was the first challenger that she has had in a really long time. She... As we told you, she had to have a debate with him because she was feeling the pressure on that. That's where we found out that she was pro-fracking. We've got a fracking story coming up for you pretty soon. So if you're pro-fracking, then
stop
you're basically pro-giant earthquakes everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that this was... Yeah. Did I give money to Tim Canova and do I wish that he would have won?
Absolutely.
Sure. Like, she's... I can't
she's
possibly
terrible.
Understand how... any single Democrat would have like gone to the polls to vote for her. I can't wrap my head around it. But
and yet, it wasn't as many people as you would have guessed.
Exactly. It wasn't.
Could have been worse.
It could have been worse.
And it shows that even in a district like hers, which is a fairly establishment district filled with old people,
right,
that there's room for movement to the left.
Tim Canova was a nobody.
No, yeah. He was like an actual nobody.
Yeah.
He's not like a law their state legislator or something like that.
Like, he was just sort of like fed up with her and was like, I'm going to run.
And he ran. He jumped into the race long before the Sanders thing really took off.
Yeah. So I'm not convinced that she can't be beaten.
Yeah. I don't. I think she can.
Yeah.
And you know what? We get to run against her every 2 years. So
that's right.
We can keep trying to beat her.
Need to field a name next time.
Yeah. If there's names in Florida. It's Florida.
Of course.
It's a big state. Speaking of Florida, Patrick Murphy won his primary against Alan Grayson.
And that was not close, by the way.
That was not close.
Which is upsetting.
But that was also, the Democrats threw...
Did Grayson quit his seat to run for that? I don't think so either, right?
No,
so we can still have the joy of Alan Grayson.
Also, do you think Alan Grayson's ever going to shut up?
Unless he gets kicked out for ethics violations.
Right.
Then we won't have Alan Grayson.
We might hear even more from him if he does that.
That's true.
What does he have to lose at that point?
He should win the TV show.
Oh my God, right? It'd be amazing.
He should be like the new Keith Olbermann.
Yeah, I know. He'd be great at that. And he's apparently just like... very smart. He's annoying, but he's like smart enough that he retains all the information in his head.
Right.
He could moderate a debate and it would be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Rubio also won. Shocker.
Yeah.
So he's back to his old tricks. And by the way, nobody's voting for Patrick Murphy against Marco Rubio in Florida.
I mean,
Patrick Murphy is our age, is a literal nobody whose only qualification is that he is a rich dad.
Right.
And the Democrats
were
like,
backing.
We like this guy.
We like this guy.
Yeah. He seems like a rich guy.
He's only like a 2 or 3 term congressperson, I think, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's his only job experience.
Yeah.
So
that's not.
That's nothing.
Nope.
Meanwhile, here's some news about fracking. It causes earthquakes. Yeah. Oklahoma had a 5.6 magnitude earthquake.
You probably heard about this earthquake because
it was big.
It was big. What you may not have heard about is that Oklahoma has, you probably knew that Oklahoma has been having a lot of these earthquakes.
Yeah.
They have had
an unusual number because Oklahoma's not naturally prone to earthquakes.
They've had 11 earthquakes
at 4.5
or higher since 2011 in the last 5 years. So that's more than 2 a year. And they're having other little ones all the time.
Right.
Like this is all
the time. It's like SoCal style over there.
And people have been saying, there was like a U.S. geological, you know, study that came out like in 2013 that were like, guys, stop fracking.
Right. Because fracking causes earthquakes.
Fracking causes earthquakes. But
Oklahoma, didn't stop them.
Being who they are, obviously didn't shut down the fracking. And here we are, lo and behold, a 5.6 earthquake, which is the biggest one that they've had,
and
or tied the record.
Right, and they were finally like, oh, okay.
Right.
Maybe
so
this is fracking.
So Oklahoma shut down fracking.
Yeah.
Guys.
They shut down fracking in a 725 square mile area near the epicenter of the
quake.
That's
37
wells.
They have
to do it over a period of 10 days because they were also told that if they all stopped fracking at once, there could be more earthquakes.
Right.
Which is very troubling.
Yeah.
But apparently this was the earthquake where they were like, oh, fuck.
All right. We get
okay,
it.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
This is not right.
But like, guys.
Stop fracking.
The fracking thing.
It's a bad idea.
It couldn't be, there's not one thing about it that's a good idea, except maybe bringing down the cost of oil. But beyond that, like, if you have to do it at the expense of like livelihoods.
Yeah, let's
like,
invest
to the point
all
of, like,
of this money
you can,
in finding ways
you know,
to use less oil
where
then,
you can,
because I can't have
where
time
entire
for this.
States are about to, you know, crumble and you know, you can set rivers and lakes on fire.
Right.
Like, that's not what you're looking for.
That's not a great plan. No. That's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
We are smart people who can come up with ways
we can
to not
do
use
better.
The oil.
Yes.
We can heat our houses without oil if we need to. We can make electricity without oil. We can drive cars without oil.
Yeah.
We can do all
we
of these things.
We can vote for Jill Stein.
We can vote for Jill Stein. But I mean, these are things that we can figure out.
Yeah.
We're not idiots.
No.
We came up with the iPhone.
We humans. Have a lot of these answers already.
We
it's
already
the
have
upsetting
a lot of these.
Things.
It's an even more upsetting part of this. Yeah. But yeah, we don't, the fracking is not
it's gotta go.
The thing.
No.
Because we, as people who live in Southern California, can say with all certainty that earthquakes are not fun.
No, it's not. No, nobody likes it.
Nobody likes an earthquake.
It's terrifying.
I've never been in an earthquake and thought, this is fun.
No.
Every time I've been like,
no,
I've got to get down and I don't know where to stand.
Right. And I would assume that being in Oklahoma is already terrible enough.
Right,
anyway,
like,
you don't need to be sitting
things
through.
Things get worse.
They already have tornadoes.
Yeah, it's like,
and then now
you
they
should
have
not,
earthquakes,
by the way,
also,
have two natural disasters
other
hitting at once.
Oklahomans. They have Mary Fallon.
Exactly.
I mean, it's terrible.
It's a nightmare over
just,
there.
Like, just its very existence is bad.
No,
and then you have to put giant earthquakes into the mix?
If you live in a tornado zone, you should not also have to be dealing with earthquakes.
It's unfair.
And not earthquakes that your government
it's
gave you.
It's unfair to... I'm sure there are some lovely people in Oklahoma. And
sure.
They
and
don't deserve this.
Those are people that don't deserve this. No,
no.
Exactly. That's... Those are the only, they're the only people keeping things together over there, most likely.
Probably.
You don't want to drive them out.
No.
By causing, I mean, earthquakes plus tornadoes. I hadn't even thought of that angle, but yeah. That's the most horrifying thing I can imagine.
Dust bowl things. There's,
yeah, dust know, bowls.
It's not great.
People who have to leave during the Great Depression because your state has turned into one giant, you know, rolling fluff ball.
No, that's not.
Or dust ball. I don't know what fluff ball would be.
No. So, good for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And I'm also, shocked.
I'm shocked. And also, shit must be real scary.
Yeah.
If Oklahoma was like, okay, fine, we see, we get it.
Right, fine, we get it, science.
Right. Okay, maybe there's some truth to this.
Yeah.
Then, yeah. And in final news, Michelle Bachmann remains crazy.
Oh, God bless her.
Read us this quote, Brent, because I certainly can't.
Oh, God, I know you told me I was going to have to do this, and I was like, I can read it, but I cannot explain it.
I don't think I can even read it.
Lila.
I know you can't explain it, because it doesn't make any sense.
Lila put me up to this, because it has, like, God and religion nonsense.
Yeah, it says things in
am I reading
religion
both of these
words.
Quotes?
Yeah, read them both.
Okay, all right, here we go. I actually supported Ted Cruz. I thought he was fabulous, but I also see that at the end of the day, God raised up, I believe, Donald Trump, who was going to be the nominee in this election. I don't think God sits things out. He's a sovereign God. Donald Trump became our nominee.
Whew, okay.
That's a lot. That's
all right.
A
God
lot to
put Donald Trump up to this election.
Yes, he's a sovereign God.
I caught
he's
that,
a,
sort of.
He's a voter God.
Right. God is a sovereign God. I don't know why that needed to be added to this. I get
I don't
the, him not sitting things out, I think, implies what she needs to imply.
Yeah.
There, but
she's not done.
No.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Probably are.
You probably are. But I do know that the Bible is true.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Written by God's actual hands.
Exactly.
Yes.
But the only thing I know for sure
is
this one fact that can't be verified ever.
The same God who also wrote the United States Constitution, by the way.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. Prolific writer.
Prolific writer. Yeah, anyway. But I do know that the Bible is true and that Daniel teaches the Most High God, which is one of God's names, is the one who lifts up who will... And takes down who he will. Wait, what?
But he lifts up who he will and takes down who he will.
See, I couldn't even actually
get
through it.
I got confused because I don't know who Daniel is.
Well, but it doesn't...
And I don't know why we have to call God Most High God and then remind everyone that that's one of God's names because it has the word God already in it.
Well, I can't necessarily recall the exact reason why she might be talking about Daniel here, but I can tell you.
Who's Daniel?
But I can
is
tell you.
Is he an apostle of some sort?
Well, remember, he was in the lion's den. Daniel in the lion's den.
I don't remember
that
at all. Of course not.
Anyway, but I can tell you with certainty. Whereas Michelle Bachmann thinks she might be wrong because she is. That Daniel, at the time, whatever he was doing, wasn't making any predictions about the 2016 presidential election in regards to Donald Trump.
Absolutely not. No.
There was no...
And that, Brent goes to church, you guys. So this is coming from the mouth of a churchgoer.
God.
He has more credibility than I do in this matter. But I would contend from my own opinion, which is as a person who doesn't know who Daniel is, that even I know that that's true.
Yeah. She is, she's for what it's worth, she's on Trump's evangelical executive advisory
board.
For
what board. It's
worth. Yeah. She also had another doozy in this. Oh, by the way, this interview, I don't know if we said this, but it was with the CBN. It was with the Christian
Broadcasting Network.
So she was with a friendly audience, a friendly, crazy audience.
Right. Who maybe, well, this sentence most describes how I felt that time that we were at your Christmas concert and the pastor got up to speak and you knew there was like a moment where you looked over at me and I just like doubled over in laughter because it just like went off the rails.
Yeah.
And like, it wasn't that he said anything objectionable. It was that he stopped making sense.
Yes.
And got so weighed down in church metaphor that he stopped having a point.
It happens.
And it happens, I'm sure, because you have a lot of church metaphors just rolling around in your head when you're a pastor. And sometimes you're wearing a dumb Christmas sweater and you're in front of an audience of old church
you're
ladies. You're trying to figure out the metaphor that most suits the occasion and you get all of them. You just pick all of them. That's kind of what he did.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you need to know what that felt like... To me, I feel like this sentence perfectly describes that moment.
No, I get it.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell is going on here?
Don't know. Yeah.
But here's another thing. She doesn't want to be melodramatic, but she does want to be truthful.
Yeah.
I believe without a shadow of a doubt, this is her speaking,
That
this is the last election.
Oh.
This is it. This is the last election. And the reason why I say that that David, who I guess is who she's talking to, is because it's a math problem. It's a math problem of demographics and a changing United States. All right. If you look at the numbers of people who vote and who live in this country and who Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton want to bring into this country, this is the last election when we even have a chance to vote for somebody who will stand up for godly moral principles.
Now,
this is it.
Now, short of the last part about voting for somebody with godly her. Morals.
This is the last election for Republicans if they continue down this path.
Yes,
absolutely. She's right.
She could not be more right here. But the thing that is ridiculous about this statement is that
that's their own doing.
Right. It's she and her people have caused this.
Yeah.
Because the reason that they can't win a national election, and we saw this from their, you know, autopsy from 2012. Yeah. The reason that they will never be able to vote for someone who will win an election again is because of it's not the demographics themselves.
No.
It's that the people who belong to those demographics
can't stomach
are not
voting for these idiots
going to vote for you for because you've been denigrating them for the last God knows how long.
Exactly.
Like,
I mean,
when you say that you want to, you know, that all Mexicans are rapists or that, you know, black people's lives are in shambles because they don't work and are lazy and,
right.
you know, whatever else you're
and,
saying, and
you
that women don't shouldn't have
women
control
shouldn't
over
have
their
control.
Own
right,
bodies.
Exactly. And that, like, gay people shouldn't be allowed to
right.
do anything
because
they're sinners.
That's not a demographics problem. That's a your stupidity
yeah.
problem.
Right. The people are still here.
Right. It's
some
the same
them,
people.
It's the same
yes,
people.
Yes, we get some new people.
Right.
Sure.
But some of those people are as dumb as the old people. You
right.
know?
Exactly.
That's the problem with people.
Right.
You
it's
get more
your
people,
dumbness, it's, not their dumbness.
No, exactly. They can be convinced of dumb things.
Sure.
The people are just the people. Being some of them are dumb. Like, some of them believe very strongly in an American dream that doesn't exist. Some of them think that their morality is more important than our morality.
Right.
That's true of new people and old people
right.
alike.
Uh-huh.
That's true of immigrants and American,
right.
you know, American-born
sure.
people. That's true of black and white people. That's
yeah.
I mean, that's true of all the kinds of people. Some of
yes.
them are dumb and some of them aren't.
That's right.
Some of them like to follow you down a logical loophole that doesn't, you know, just never hits the bottom.
Yep.
Some of them want to think about things. That's true wherever you are.
That's right.
The problem is if you take those dumb people who just
yeah.
happen to not be white men.
Right. And tell them they're
and
awful.
And tell them they're awful. The only logical direction they can go with that is I'll vote for the other guy.
Right.
Because those are probably people that you could be like, you know who's dumb is everyone else. And they would be like, yep.
Yep.
I'm with you.
Yep.
You got to get those lazy people out of here. It's lazy people that are causing these problems or whatever. I mean, the language yeah. that they used to use to get these voters was about lazy people.
Yeah, for sure.
It was about the welfare queen.
Welfare queen.
And the welfare
yeah.
queen was a racially coded concept to begin
obviously.
With, obviously. But the welfare queen concept was not an overtly racist concept in the way that the Donald Trump movement is an
right.
overtly racist movement.
Right.
It was genteel racism, as I like to refer to it.
Yes.
It was coded
I
racism.
Love that
it was
term,
the Lindsey Graham racism
yeah.
of, you know, it was not Mexicans are rapists and murderers.
No.
And I feel like this is a lesson that they should have learned from 2012 and didn't.
Didn't.
That
they learned the exact opposite lesson
yeah.
that they should have.
And now they're like, we're gonna use the coded language of white nationalism. We're going to talk
yeah.
about law and order. We're going to talk about building a wall. We're going to talk about implying that every person of Middle Eastern heritage is a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do all of those things.
Yep.
And we're going to be so confused why those people don't want to vote for us
right,
anymore.
Exactly.
And we're going to blame it on demographics. There's
yeah.
just not as many white men as there used to be, you guys.
Oh, darn.
And you know what? There's still as many assholes as there used to be. So,
they're
I mean,
there.
This on you.
That's right.
If you can't figure out besides the white men who else are assholes in this country,
right.
that's on you.
Right.
It's your whole
now,
fucking job.
I was going to say. We could do it for them,
but
I'm
not
interested
to.
In helping.
No, of course not. Sounds terrible.
You know why we could help?
We finally beat
it's not
them.
Hard.
It's not hard. It's not hard to figure out how to appeal to the baser instincts in people.
No.
But you got to figure out what baser instincts we all share beyond whiteness.
That's it.
Like there's,
that's it.
There's base instincts that
that's
people
it.
Who aren't white also share with white people.
That's it.
And these people are not figuring out what those instincts are.
They're not.
Meanwhile, we still live in a country where Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are pulling neck and neck. So obviously,
yep.
there's still too many white people, but
yeah.
hopefully the demographics are shifting faster than she says they
know,
are.
Exactly.
I can't take any more yeah. of this. In any case,
oh boy.
That's the news this week. We're going to have some interesting, we're going to be in touch over the
right.
next few weeks, but we may not have regular podcasts.
Should we tell people where we're going? Because it's exciting.
Yeah, we're going
exciting.
On exciting trips. Brent's going to Iceland.
I'm
going to Scandinavia.
Tomorrow. When you're listening
we
to this,
we just decided
I'm in
after talking about how dangerous white people are for an hour to go to the whitest countries on earth.
Yeah.
We're just taking trips to
yeah.
places that white people come from to
yeah.
mm-hmm. really get a sense of what white people are up to in really
right.
white places.
Yeah.
No, but we're going on trips.
I'm going to Iceland. You're going to
I'm going to Scandinavia.
All over Scandinavia.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
We will hopefully...
Well, we're gone for like 3 collective weeks.
Yeah, we're gone for 3 collective weeks.
But we're going to try and do some stuff.
We're not ever gone at the same time, so we're going to try to have some stuff for you guys in
right.
the interim, keep you updated about what's happening with the
yeah.
elections, make sure that we don't have to report on 3 weeks worth of news when we get back, because
right.
who has the time? That's exhausting sounding.
Yeah, you're going to miss the first debate, which is sad.
I know.
I
and
know.
It's like, I'm literally getting back right after that.
That
it's horrible. But we will be in touch with you, yeah. whichever one of us is in touch with you.
Right.
Keep an eye on our blog. Keep an eye on our iTunes feed because we'll have little things coming up. And we will talk to you in a few weeks.
Bye.
Bye.